Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Sivus is Sadi Ches Engelupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Tafis. We're in the Mishnah Sadi Zayin Amud Aleph, we're on the bottom of the Amud. Amana Bein Menerison Bein Anisun Mocheres Shelo Beveizdin. And Amana, whether she is a widow both from the first or second stage of marriage, Erison Nisun, she sells off and she does not need Beizdin in order to do so. So first of all, after Nisuin, so that's the, she's fully married, so we know that there are really two things coming to her financially. Number one, she still has support, that's called Mizonos, which we've been discussing now for the last couple of days in the 11th parak of the Masechta. And the second thing that she's receiving is her ksuva. Now again, once she gets fully paid with the ksuva, so then she's no longer going to receive mizonos. But at this point, at this juncture of time, though, we could really be talking about both. We could talk about mizonos and we could talk about ksuva. However, if she's a widow from Erisin, so there's only one thing to talk about, and that's her ksuva. There's no mizonos. There's no chiv mizonos. That doesn't kick in until nisuin. So when she is a widow from Erisin, so really the only thing that could be talking about is ksuva. But according to the Tanna Kamma of the Mishnah, that's fine. Meaning that it doesn't matter whether she's coming to collect mizonos, whether she's coming to ksuva, so she could do so, and she doesn't need to go through Beis Din in order to do so. Now, obviously, and we'll discuss a lot of this over the course of today. In other words, you have to know that she's got a fair price for the property. Meaning, she's selling property, and it's not her property that she's selling. She has a shibud on the property, she has a lien on it, but it's not her property. So, obviously, you have to have assurances, and you have to know that what she's getting is a fair market value for what she's selling. So, there has to be some sort of appraisal. And we'll talk more about that over the course of this morning, the topic of this morning. But the point the Mishnah is making, however, is that she does not have to go through the court in order to sell the property. She could sell the property on her own, and that would be a valid sale.
What about the ocean?
And what about them?
She steps in front of them and does it?
She's holding a note. She's a note holder. She's entitled to that money. So it's not she's stepping in front of them. In other words, they owe her. She has a collectible. So the Rabbi Shimon Omer min anisuin mocheres lo bebeizdin min erison lo timkor lo bebeizdin. And Rabbi Shimon argues on the following. He says that if she's a widow from nisuin, so then she's able to sell, and she's able to sell without beizdin. So to that point he agrees. However, min erison, but if we're talking about where she's a widow from erison, and the only thing that she's collecting now is her ksuva, and she's not collecting her mizonos lo timkor lo bebeizdin, so therefore she can only sell through Beisim. Mimnesha ain't la mizonos. The Mishnah spells it out. The reason why is because she doesn't have mizonos. V'choshe ain't la mizonos, so timkar la bebeisim. And if we're not talking about mizonos, then the only thing that we're talking about is ksuva, so then it has to be done through Beisim. As Rashi points out in the Mishnah, the last Rashi in the Mishnah, Macher shalal bebeisim, Shiev shalal yosu shefas, and Matana as she is daka la bebeisim. Because look, Beisim, as we point out a number of times, Beisim does two things, plus and a minus. Number one, Beisim gives an assurance that everything was done kedas gedin, it was done correctly. On the other hand, Beis Din slows everything down, because now you're going through Beis Din, and so now you're going through the legal system, and everything gets slowed down. So if we're talking about mizonos, we can't wait right now. In other words, she has to eat today, tomorrow, and as I speculated yesterday, she's also going to have to eat 3 days from now as well. In other words, food is an urgent necessity. So if she has to eat today, tomorrow, and so she can't She can't just sit and wait until Beis Din gets around to selling the land. Aval min ha'erusin, but if she's a widow from erusin, she'ein mechiras ha'aluksuva, where there is no mizonos, because the obligation of mizonos only start from the point of nisuin and onward. So if we're just talking about erusin, so then we're only selling the ksuva as a result of the ksuva. She's only selling the property as a result of the ksuva. So lo timkor lo bebeizdin. So therefore, she can only sell it within the context of Beis Din. Fine. Ad kan, that takes us through the Mishnah. So you have a basic machlokas between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon. And they're both in agreement that when she's selling land from mizonos, obviously she could sell it, and she doesn't have to go through Beis Din, because we want a expeditious sale of the land so that she can eat. But when it comes to selling the land to recoup on a ksuva, so we seemingly now have a machlokes between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon. Tanna Kamma says she can also do it without Beis Din, and Rabbi Shimon says no, she must do it through Beis Din. Now Bishlamim and Nesuim Mishum Mizonah. So the Gemara says, look, here's what I understand. I understand the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint. If she is a widow from Nisuin, where she needs her Mizonah, she needs to eat today, so I understand. She could sell the land and she doesn't have to go through Beis Din. Element Erison. But here's what I don't understand about the Tanna Kamma. Meaning, essentially what the Gemara is saying is, Rabbi Shimon's making a great point. Rabbi Shimon says that if the only thing that she is recouping is her ksuva, so it doesn't have to be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be the day after that. In other words, what is the rush when it comes to the ksuva? So the Gemara is essentially asking, within the shita, the Tanakama, I don't understand. Mina Erisin, she's a widow from Erisin. The only thing she's now coming to recoup is the ksuva. My taima. So why is it that, according to the Tanakama, she could sell her land and she doesn't have to go through Beis Din? So to that, the Gemara is going to propose two suggestions. Amar Ula Mishum Chena. So Ula says because of Chen, because of literally favor, grace, to make it more attractive. Now I said it and not her. It could go one of two ways, right? Rashi and Tosfos constantly and consistently argue exactly what this means when the Gemara describes Chen. Rashi says to make it more attractive. It meaning marriage. In other words, to the women out there who know that they're going to get married, but also know that life happens, and they know that I may need at the end of the marriage to collect my ksuva. So if she knows that the collection of ksuva is not going to be this long drawn out process, but it can happen, and then she can just sell the land, and that would be it. So then to her, marriage is going to be more attractive. So one suggestion of the Gemara is that the reason why, according to the Tanakama, she could sell the land for the ksuva and she doesn't have to go through Beis Din, is because it makes marriage more attractive. Okay, that is Rashi. Tosfos says to make her more attractive. In other words, make her more attractive, as we've discussed a number of times, aside from all the inner and outer beauty that a woman has, but also if she has money, it helps. So the easier access she has to get her money, so then the better chance that she's going to have to remarry. Okay, so...
Second marriage.
Huh?
It only works for a second marriage.
No, what do you mean it works for a second marriage? After her first...
She would want to marry her because she got...
Oh, you meaning if she...
From somebody else.
Well, for the first time, the first time she'll get something from her father. In other words, it'll be easier for her if she comes into the marriage with a little. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so that's the. So one suggestion is Ula's suggestion, which is Chen. Another one says the Gemara is Rav Yochanan Amalefishe Na Demar Sishitis Baza Ishta BeBeisdin. So another explanation. This is Rav Yochanan. Is that the husband, generally speaking, doesn't want his wife to go to the Beis Din. Going to Beis Din is very public. You're very exposed. It's difficult. And so the husband would prefer that, you know what? It's my wish that, even after I'm dead, I don't want my wife to have to go through Beis Din. Let her sell off the property. Let her do it outside of the realm of Beis Din. I'm perfectly fine with that. And in fact, I prefer that. It's better for her. So, So, my Benayuk or Benayuk Grusha. So, Gemara points out now, based on these two explanations we gave the Tanakama, there's going to be a very simple nafkamina, and that would be, what if she's not a widow? What if she's a divorcee? She's a divorcee. Lamandam, Mishim Chena Grusha, Nami Bai Chain. Now, if the issue is Chain, so in other words, again, either to make the institution of marriage more attractive or to make her more attractive. Either way, a grusha is going to want both. In other words, a woman knows that let's go like Rashi. A woman knows that even if she's going to get divorced, but she's going to be able to collect her ksuva, and she won't have to go through the court to collect her ksuva. Okay, you know what? Fine. We'll try this marriage out, and hopefully it'll work. And if it doesn't, at least my ability to recoup the ksuva is going to be not a legal process. So the Gemara says, I understand that would be true by an almana, and it would be true by a grusha as well. But l'man damar l'fishein adam roshishit tisvaz isha bebeis din. So the Gemara says, but if we go with Rav Yochanan's understanding that the reason why a woman can generally sell land and not have to go through Beis Din is because the husband does not want her to go through Beis Din. The husband wants to protect her. So Gemara says, I understand if she's a widow. In other words, that's probably what the husband's wishes are. But if she's a divorcee, so the husband and her at this point in time probably are not getting along. And by the way, when I say probably, I'm doing more than speculating. Okay? And it's an obvious point. And so in other words, I don't want her to go to Beis Din. No, in this particular case, he'd actually like her to go to Beis Din. So in other words, so grusha lo ichbale. Okay, so the Gemara says a little more neutrally. The Gemara says he doesn't care one way or another. Okay, maybe you could even say it's stronger, but still the point is that if this is the reason behind a woman not having to go through Beis Din to sell land, but if she's a grusha, so then she would. So okay, so we have now a position in the Mishnah that an almana does not have to sell her land to collect her ksuva, according to the Tanakama. An almana does not have to go through Beis Din to sell the land. She could do it outside of Beis Din. Two explanations of that Mishnah and a nafkamina, and a practical difference, and that would be a grusha. Tanan, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. Ugrusha lo timkar lo beBeis Din. So the Mishnah says that a grusha can only sell land, but she can only do so through Beis Din. That's the Braisa. Okay, that's pretty strong. Meaning the Brisa says very clearly that a grusha has to sell land through Beis Din.
Now, his husband has died, though, right?
Huh?
Is a grusha whose husband has died after they got divorced?
Well, no, not necessarily.
Why wouldn't the husband just
sell? Why wouldn't the husband sell? Okay, yeah. It could be right. So Bishlam Laman Dam Lefishin Adam Rotsushi Disbaze Shabba Beis Din Grusha Loichbale. So the Gemara says, good. According to Rav Yochanan, it works out perfectly. Meaning that according to Rav Yochanan, why does the Grusha have to go to Beis Din? Because again, generally, a man does not want his wife to go to Beis Din. It's no longer his wife, it's his ex-wife. He doesn't mind if she goes to Beis Din. But Elaman Dam Mishim Chena Grusha Nami Bai Chen. But if it's an issue of Chen, so Grusha also would want Chen. So the Gemara says, so why does she have to go to Beis Din? Based on the principle of Chen, shouldn't we make the argument that she'd be able to sell the land without Beis Din? So how many Rabbi Shimon he? So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? To sidestep this issue, we could just simply say, look, you quoted an anonymous Brisa, that's fine. Let's give attribution. Let's say that the anonymous Brisa belongs to Rabbi Shimon. And as we learned back in the Mishnah, in the beginning of today's daf, according to Rabbi Shimon, you can, only if you want your mezonos can you sell land outside of Beis Din. But if you're selling land for your ksuva, you must do it through Beis Din. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon, atana le'resha, mina erison lo timkor. So the Gemara says, well, if the author of that position is Rabbi Shimon, so the Gemara says, well, don't we know Rabbi Shimon's opinion already? In other words, it said in the beginning that mina erison, that if a woman is a widow from erison, so therefore she shouldn't sell. She shouldn't sell land outside of Beis Din. So Ma'od Detema Amana Min Erison Hu Delo Nafish Chen Dida Ava Grusha De Nafish Chen Dida Ema Tibaye Chen. So the Gemara says, look, here's the argument you could have constructed. You could have said that as it relates to a widow from the Erison, there is less of an argument that she can sell outside of Beis Din as opposed to a divorcee, where there you can create a stronger argument. So now this is interesting. The Gemara says that as it relates to a widow from Erisin, so again, to quote the language of the Gemara, lo nafish chen dida. She doesn't need as much chen. She doesn't need as much chen, Rashi, lo nafish chen dida, shelo haisa lachibas bia, velo yare be'ene hanashim im hutrecha zu. Because she, who's a widow from Erisin, so although she was married, right, that's not up for discussion, but she didn't live together, she wasn't intimate with her husband. So in other words, she did not have a strong marriage. I'm saying strong marriage, in other words, in the very basic sense, right, that she and her husband were not together. They were not intimate with one another. And so therefore for her now, this is really more financial than anything else. Meaning, again, we're not discounting the fact that she just lost her husband. But the idea is that she's a widow, but in other words, she didn't have that sense of loss, had somebody who'd been fully married, been intimate with her husband. And so therefore, this is more financial than it is for a quote-unquote standard almana, standard widow who's been together with her husband. And so therefore, for her, you can make the argument, Reb Shimon makes the argument that she wants to collect her ksufa, she has to go through Beis Din. But over here, if we're talking about a grusha, if we're talking about a divorcee, so it's she was intimate with her husband. That's a substantial amount of loss for her. Meaning, again, obviously, they chose this division separation, but still. So maybe you could argue that even according to Rabbi Shimon, who normally has her selling her ksuva in Beis Din, but maybe she could do it outside of Beis Din. So that's why I need both points within Rabbi Shimon. So emati baichen hanami tanina koshin la mezonos. So the Gemara says, okay, but again, if you're telling me that the whole point over here is to teach me that this is Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, don't we know it already? Rabbi Shimon says that as long as she's not looking to get her mezonos, as long as she's looking to get her ksuva and only her ksuva, she has to go through Beis Din. So a grusha is looking to get her ksuva. So she has to go through Beis Din. Meaning, what am I missing over here? Obviously, according to Rabbi Shimon, she has to go through Beis Din. So lasuya maila, lasuya grusha. So isn't that point to tell me that a grusha, if she's coming to collect her ksuva, has to go through Beis Din? Lo, lasuya megoreshes, reina megoreshes. So the Gemara says no. Maybe that point of the Mishnah is to teach me a very subtle case, and the subtle case is talking about a woman who is possibly divorced. Possibly, because Rabbi Zera, this is a classic case that the Gemara illustrates. Now, the case is unlikely, but that's not the point. The point is that we're just simply showing a woman who is in a state of suffic grusha. Da'am Rabbi Zera, komakum shamar megareshev and a megareshes. You have a scenario where the result is she's divorced, she's not divorced. Teya, the classic example, Rashi points out, man throws a ksuva to his wife, it lands somewhere between them, suffik karav lo, suffik karav la, it could be closer to him, could be closer to her, so that's the case of suffik megurashes. So, ba'al chai b'mizonasaha. So even though, from a standpoint of they may or may not be divorced, but still, the husband has a right and obligation to still give her mizonos. So it could be that over there, a husband has a right to give her mizonos, so therefore, under those circumstances, if she's coming to collect her ksuva, if she's coming to sell her property, so under those circumstances, that's a recoup of her mizonos, and therefore she can sell it outside of Beis Din. Tashma. Kishem shemecher shalo bebeisim, kach yorsha, yorsha yikzivasa, mochem shalo bebeisim. Just like she is able to sell her, sell off the property, not through Beis Din, so too the yorsha, so too those who inherit her, can sell it, through, without having Beis Din. Bishlam alamanda mafishin adam rosisha tizbaza isha bebeis din, ki echidi I, he, lo nicha lay, titizbaze, yorsha nami, lo nicha lay, delivzu. So the Gemara says, look, if you go with the argument of Rav Yochanan that a man does not want his wife to have to go to court, it's demeaning to her, it's degrading to her, well, maybe you can extend that argument, then maybe you could say, well, that's not only true regarding her, it's also true regarding the Yershim as well. Meaning, it's just not right, it's not appropriate. But if the issue is chayin to make marriage or her more attractive, so the Gemara says, Yersha my chayin ika. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if we're talking now about the inheritors coming to collect the ksuva, so what chayin is there by her son coming in and saying, oh, you know what? I can't sell through Beis Din because I want marriage to be more attractive to me. We don't need to make marriage more attractive to men. We do need to make marriage more attractive to women. So the Gemara says, Tir Gemara, Ula kikon shiyarsta bital chata. So Ula says, okay, the point's very valid, but I'll just simply tell you that the case over the being discussed in this brisa is the case where, you know who the Yerush is? Yerush is her only daughter. Her only daughter is now coming to collect her mother's ksuva. So now, imagine, if the only way she can collect her ksuva is having to have to go to Beis Din, and now she goes to Beis Din, and she goes through the full process of Beis Din, really, this is what marriage is? And understandably, she can be turned off by the whole process. And so therefore, the Ula will argue that under those circumstances, she can collect outside of Beis Din as well. Let me just summarize quickly, and then I'll pause. So basically now, what do we have? A woman's right to sell the property in order to collect. If it's her mizonos, we have agreement in the Mishnah that for mizonos she can sell off properties of her late husband, and she doesn't have to go through Beis Din. And again, the understanding is that she needs food today, and so therefore an expeditious sale is necessary, and so therefore everyone's agreement, Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon, she could sell it now through Beis Din. What about if she's selling it just for her ksuva? So here we have a machlok between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon. As we'll see later today, the halach is going to go like the Tanakama, but we have a machlokes between these Tanayim. Tanakama says she doesn't have to go through Beis Din. Rabbi Shimon says no, she has to go through Beis Din. It's easier to understand Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint, meaning it's just a ksuva. She doesn't need it today. Can wait. She'll get it eventually, but she has to go through Beis Din. And what's behind the Tanakama? So the Gemara brought in two opinions, Ula and Rav Yochanan. Ula says we need to market marriage. And so therefore, her ability to collect her ksuva outside of Beis Din will make marriage or her more attractive. And so therefore, that's why she doesn't have to go through Beis Din. Rav Yochanan gives a different argument. Husband did not want her to have to go through Beis Din. It's demeaning. And the Gemara suggested that maybe a divorcee would be a nafkamina based on these two reasons.
It seems like at times, you know, the Gemara's view of a woman's view of and marriage is contradictory. And one is a woman will
marry anybody. Yeah, very good.
The guy
very good.
And now you're saying no. You know, you're
right. I hear you. I think that's an excellent observation. I don't know how to respond to that observation, but I like it. I really like that point. Right. The Gemara says Tavla Meisav Tandu Mele Meisav Armelu. Right. On one hand, the Gemara says a woman will marry or settle for anybody. So all you men out there, that makes us feel like we're worth a lot. Your wife just settled. Okay. She'll do that. And then on the other hand, the Gemara says we have to market marriage, right. You know, make it more attractive. Okay, it's a very valid point.
What is demeaning about appearing in front of the Beis
Din? It's demeaning because it's very legal, it's very rigid, it's very structured. They're going to be, you know, the Beis Din is going to ask interrogating questions, you know, and it's going to whatever. It's like going to court. It's you know, it creates a, right. It creates anxiety. Whatever. Yeah, it's true, but she's not. This is litigation, though. In other words, going to court is really, it's intimidating. Okay, it's true. He's right. Okay, machra ksivasa miksasa, mashkana ksivasa miksasa, nasna ksivasa la'achar umiksasa, lom timkor tashar ela bebezdin. Okay, what if she sells the ksuva or some of it? What if she collateralizes her ksuva or some of it? What if she gives her ksuva to somebody else or some of it? So now, lo timkor tashar ela bebezdin. So now for her to be able to recoup the remainder of the ksuva, so she can only do so in the presence of Beis Din. Rashi points out, look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Kamar La. This first line of the Mishnah is a reflection of the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon. Because again, like we learned at the beginning of today's daf, you're only allowed to sell outside of Beis Din only for mizonos. But once you're selling the land for ksuva, it must be done, according to Rabbi Shimon, through Beis Din. Vizu, continue in Rashi, mekevin shegavda mitzasa, ein lamizonos v'achimulkala begemar, ke Rabbi Shimon. And Rashi, knowing the Gemara, so Rashi's disclosing to us, I'm giving it away right now, Rashi's telling us that the opinion of Rabbi Shimon goes like this. Once a woman collects her first dollar of the ksuva, the mizonos is turned off. In other words, here's what we know. Her mizonos is going to be collected until she gets the ksuva payment. And so the question is a really simple question. Some of the ksuva payment or all the ksuva payment? Good. That's the question on the table. But Rabbi Shimon has a very clear response to that question. Rabbi Shimon says, even some of the ksuva payment is already now a satisfaction of the ksuva. Obviously, there's a balance. Obviously, that balance is going to get paid. But once she gets her first dollar of that ksuva, that's it. She is now being paid, in the process of being paid her ksuva. Therefore, her mizonos come to a conclusion. And so now, once she gets that first dollar for the ksuva, so at this point going forward, any land she sells is going to be for ksuva, no longer going to be for mizonos. Now we go back to the previous Mishnah, and what do we know? That according to Rabbi Shimon, once she's selling land for only ksuva, you go straight to Beis Din. You have to do it through Beis Din. Good.
The structure makes sure doesn't make sense, because it says whether she sells all or part of it, and it says she may not sell the remainder except for
applicable. Right. The clause of remainder is only going on partial.
Part of it.
But you're right. In other words, but the Mishnah presenting it as
no statement that
understood. Understood. Another very good point. The Chachamim omrim mocheres yafilu arba v'chamisha pamim, and the Chachamim say no, she could sell four or five times, and the she could do it in increments. In various stages, and still during the time she could still also collect from mizonos as well. Okay, umalcheres mizonos shelo beis din, and she could sell mizonos also, and she could do that outside of beis din. The kosevas of lemizonos macharti, and then on the sale contract she's going to write that I did sell for mizonos. Remember, we learned this earlier. We quoted this Mishnah earlier, right? And the Gemara earlier suggested this is Eitz HaTova, just good old advice. That when selling land, so she should be clear. One of the reasons why we suggested earlier in the Gemara is so she doesn't walk away with a bad reputation. Look at her just selling off all that land. And if she didn't write with clarity what it was for, so people will say, man, this woman really eats a lot. And she's what the Gemara described as a Rav Tanusa. So therefore, to protect her reputation, so she should detail, she should spell out when she sells land, this is for this is for that. Ugrusha lo timkar ela bebeisdin. And then, we quoted this line of the Mishnah earlier this morning, a grusha cannot sell her off her properties unless she's in Beis Din. So again, we could learn this line of the Mishnah one of two ways. Either, it's just a reflection of Rabbi Shimon's opinion, where Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that once she's selling for Ksuva, she must do it through Beis Din, or we can even say this is a Tanakama. Tanakama says that she can sell land outside of Beis Din, but that's only because the husband doesn't want to have to go through Beis Din. But over here, we're talking about an ex-husband, an ex-wife. Ex-husband would be fine with her, with his ex-wife having to go through Beis Din. So, two ways we can learn that line of the Mishnah. Okay, we start with the Gemara. Masisa mani Rabbi Shimon, Ditanya. Good. So, as we already forecasted, But now the Gemara says it straight out. Our Mishnah is going like whom? It's going like Rabbi Shimon, because we learned the Tanya. Machir ksuvasa, mashkana ksuvasa, ksuvasa potiki. If she either sells her ksuva, collateralizes her ksuva, or she makes her ksuva into an apotiki. Now apotiki is a lien, but an apotiki is a specific lien. You know what an apotiki is? It's basically what we do nowadays. Meaning when we borrow from the bank for a house. And we mortgage our house against that loan. So it's a lien, but it's not a general lien. Right? Most of the time when we talk about liens within the Gemara, it's going on all your real property. Nowadays when we structure a loan with the bank, so we identify very clearly it's going to be this particular piece of property, address written in, this particular piece of property, which is going to secure the loan, and to the exclusion of all the properties. That's basically what an apotiki is. Apotiki is a lien securing a loan, but with a very specific designation of one particular property. So she borrows money, she goes to the bank, she borrows money, what does she throw up there as collateral, or security, I should say? She holds up her ksuva, she says, Here, take my ksuva. And she hands it, either she hands it over, that's what the Gemara described as being a mashkon, or a potiki. She doesn't hand the ksuva over, but written in the loan document is that her ksuva will stand as a security against the loan. La'acher, so I'm sorry. So asa ksuva potiki, la'acher, ein la mizonos. So at this point in time, she no longer has mizonos. Rav Shimon Omer, afabish lamachr v'lamashka neksuvas ela mechitzasa avda mizonos seha. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, I disagree. Meaning, I don't not just disagree, I'm more extreme in that. According to Rabbi Shimon, even if she sells, collateralizes, secures even part of her ksuva against part of her ksuva, at that point in time, her mizonos has been terminated and she can no longer receive. Okay, and what comes out now is as follows. It's very simple, it's very straightforward. According to Rabbi Shimon, a partial payment of her ksuva is considered payment of her ksuva. Again, just to reiterate, that doesn't mean she's unable to collect the balance. Of course she's able to collect the balance. But in other words, it's considered as if the ksuva is paid. And therefore, no longer any mizonos. Where according to the Tanakhama, no. Only when every dollar of the ksuva is paid off, then and only then do we view the ksuva as paid. Until that point in time, she's still able to collect the mizonos. And so therefore, it takes us to a general topic that comes up again and again through Shas, and that's the topic of mitzas. So how do we view partial? So the Gemara says, "Lemeimer de Rabbi Shimon Savar de Lamina mixes kesef kekol kesef." So that means that according to Rabbi Shimon, we don't say some of the money is considered all the money. Over Rabban and Savar, I mean, it mixes kesef kekol kesef. And according to the Tanna Kama, we do say that some of the money is considered like all the money. Now it's interesting over here. Meaning, when you make this argument that some of the money is all the money, you really can come from it from two directions. You could talk about the beginning of her payment, or you could talk about the balance of her payment. The Gemara is here looking at it from the perspective of the balance of the payment, meaning that according to Rabbi Shimon, we don't say some of the kesef is like all the kesef. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, there's some money that's left unpaid. Okay, that's some money.
Like she didn't pay.
Okay, but according to Rabbi Shimon, it doesn't matter. Once she starts collecting her ksuva, that's considered paid. And according to the Chachamim, mitzas kesef kekol kesef, meaning, as long as some of the money's not been paid, we view it as if she didn't get paid her ksuva yet.
If she's getting paid in installments, does she have to take an oath after each installment that she hasn't gotten paid?
Maybe. Could be. Or she'll make an oath to the Gemara later on. We'll talk a little bit about that, but it could be. So, ha'ivcha shamin alav. The Gemara says, but I'll tell you what, we do know, however, that in the world of mitzas, on a different topic altogether, they did a role reversal, and that's the following, the Tanya. We did this machlokis back in Yevamos. We get to see it again right now. Vehu isha b'vsulaha. Last week's parsha, first aliyah. The Torah says that Kohen Gadol must marry a besula. Mitzvah says, say in the Torah, positive commandment, that a Kohen Gadol has to marry a besula. Prala bogeri shekala besula, div Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says, you know, the Kohen Gadol can't marry a mature woman. Now, in this context, mature just simply means she's over 12 and a half years of age. She's a bogeris. And for reasons we're about to explain. So Rabbi Shimon says, no, Kohen Gadol is allowed to marry bogeris. So the Gemara, and Let me say it now, so that we understand what the question is. According to Rav Meir, Kohen Gadol can't marry Bogeres. Why? Because the assumption the Gemara is making is that a woman is a basula. That's a physical, it's an anatomical feature of a woman that she has dam basulim. She has a sack. The Gemara's assumption is, and it's, you know, and if I did my research well enough by asking enough doctors, so by as she gets older, so it doesn't go away, but it effaces a little bit. So there's a slight effacement of the basulim. So what's at issue over here is as follows. Does that effacement of the basulim, does that render her now, it's right, so in other words, so as she gets older, it's partial basulim, it's mixas basulim. So is that considered, does that qualify as basula? Meaning, when the Torah gives instruction for the Kohen Gadol, you must marry a basula. So here now you're talking about a woman who's never been with a man, but just simply because she's getting older, it's part of the maturation process, so there's a slight effacement. Is that a fulfillment of the Torah of basulim? That's the machlokus between Rav Meir against Rav Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. And Rav Meir says, no, it's not good. In other words, you have to marry a basula, huh? Where she has kol basulim. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, even mixas is going to be good enough. And so now what just happened is, we flipped. It's the same machlokus, but the two opinions now flipped. Meaning here, Rabbi Shimon says, mixas is considered good. Where in the case of Ksuva, mixas is not considered good. In the case, and Rabbi Meir says that in the case of Basulim, mixas is not considered good, but meanwhile, when it comes to the payment of Ksuva, mixas is considered good. Oh, by the way, just I'm sure everyone figured this out already, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah must be Rabbi Meir. In other words, otherwise, right, the... That's how the Gemara lines it up, right? So Hasam b'kray pligi, Rabbi Meir savar besula afilu mixas besulim. So the Gemara says, look, let's not compare the two. They're in the world of besulim. They're arguing about what the definition of the Torah means. So Rabbi Meir says savar. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that besula, that when the Torah says the word besula, afilu mixas besula, adika kula besulim. Biv, I'm sorry. Afilu mixas besulim. I'm sorry. Let me do that again. Let me do it correctly. Rav Meir savar besula. Afilu mixas besulim. Had the Torah said the word besula, so then Rav Meir says, I would tell you, okay. So she doesn't have to have all her besulim, even if she gets older, and even though there's an effacement. Nevertheless, Kohen Gadol can marry her. But the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah says besuleha adika kula besulim. That extra yud is an emphasis telling us that. No, she needs her full basulim. So therefore, Kohen Gadol can only marry someone who has not reached full maturation, where she still has all of her basulim. Biv suleha, bekadarka inch lo, bekadarka lo. And then we have an extra base in that pasuk as well. Was that extra base coming to tell me? That the only area that the Torah was makbid about was the natural besulim. But the unnatural, so biyash lo kedarka, so the Torah is not makbid about that. So Rabbi Loz, Rabbi Shimon, Savar, besula, shlema, I'm sorry, that's all an explanation of Rabbi Meir. Now the Gemara says, now we're going to go to the other side. Rabbi Loz, Rabbi Shimon, Savar, besula, shlema, mashma. Rabbi Loz, Rabbi Shimon says that if the Torah would have just simply said the word besula, so that would have been all of it. Because again, now it works out great. Because according to Rabbi Shimon, he doesn't normally subscribe to the idea of mixas. But then the Torah says bisulaha with the extra yud, I feel a mixas bisulim. That's coming to tell me that even a partial bisulim would be good. And then finally, bivsulaha, shuko bisula kayamim. And then we have the extra bays, and that all the bisula have to be intact. And top Rashi, le'inyan bi'ila shalom nivala afilu shalom kedarka. And therefore, the hakpar, according to Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lazar, is that even if she had bi'ila shalom kedarka, so that's going to disqualify her to the Kohen Gadol. Okay, so Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of that discussion. So truth of the matter is now, everything is in alignment. Now it comes out that according to Rabbi Shimon, mixas is not considered like the whole thing. According to Rabbi Meir, mixas is considered like the whole thing. And so it works out well in our Mishnah by Ksuvas in terms of she got partially paid and there's a partial balance on her Ksuva. Is that considered as if she got paid? According to Rabbi Meir, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, it's not as if she got paid, and therefore she still continues to get mizonos. And according to Rabbi Shimon, even though she has a partial balance, we view it as if she got paid. We don't say mixas, and therefore her mizonos are going to be cut off. Okay. Hahi isasa de tafsa kasa de kaspa biksivasa. So we get to, it's not really a story, it's more like a case study, but the a woman who collected a silver cup as payment for a ksuva. So
that's been
metalton. Yeah, it is metalton. And Rashi doesn't say it over here, but you're going to have to say that she did so while her husband was still alive. Okay. Anyway, the point the Gemara is making over here is that it was a partial payment to Ksuva. It did not satisfy the entire Ksuva. Katava Mizone, and now she says, "Okay, I want Mizonos." Now, obviously, we're talking about at the point where she's a widow. She wants a Mizonos. Also, come to Rava, she goes to Rava. And really, the issue now is, who do we paskin like? Do we paskin like Rabbi Meir? Do we paskin like Rabbi Shimon? Meaning, here's a woman who got partially paid her ksuva, and is she still entitled to Mizonos? Simple question. Amuli asked, Mezilo havale Mizonos. So, Rava's answer was very simple. Turned to the orphans and said, you must pay her Mizonos. Leitachash lehu de Rabbi Shimon. No one is concerned about the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. It is not the accepted normative position within halacha. And so therefore, even though she got a partial payment of Ksuva, she's still entitled to Mizonos. Da'amar lo armina mixes kesef kakol kesef. Period. Shach le rava berei de rava le rav yosef mecher shlo bebeis in tzricha shvua. Question. Let's say she sells outside of Beis Din. Does she have to make a shvua or does she not have to make a shvua? Okay, so then similar to the question you asked, but not exactly the same as what your question was. But in other words, so she's selling land and she's doing so outside of Beis Din. So does she not have to make a shvua? What shvua is she making right now? Meaning she does have the ability to collect outside of Beis Din. It's within her right to do so. Again, machlokas, but according to the Tanakhama, it's within her right to do so. So, does she have to make a shvua or not? Short Rashi. Rashi said, "Tzricha shvua shelo gavsa yoser." So that she didn't collect any more above that which she was entitled to. Ketos.
Shvua will be in front of Beis Din, no?
I imagine so.
Sort of a half there and half there.
Right. In other words, but the sale itself could be done outside of Beis Din, and then I guess subsequently they'll take her to Beis Din. Okay. V'tibay lach achraza. So he says, well, let me ask you another question. What about achraza? Okay. If you remember, we did this a lot when we did Erchin, and the idea behind achraza is as follows. When you're selling property, and it's not your property that you're selling, but you're selling the property in order to recoup an obligation that you're owed, so you must sell the property on a open market. When I say open market, I mean that there has to be some sort of marketing that's done in order so that you'll fetch the best price for that property. In other words, it's not your property you're selling somebody else's property. Again, you're owed money, but you got to do so and make sure that you are being as fair as possible and you're getting the best price for that land. So this is what's called achraza. Achraza means that there would be a proclamation that was made. The Gemara elsewhere goes through a process in terms of how many times you have to announced it over the course of how many days, and that's another way of saying I forgot the numbers. But either way, it's a process. What's called achraza. So the Gemara says, "Amrle achraza lo kami baile." So he says, "Look, I'm not going to ask that question." Amrav zer, Amrav nachan, Amana shesham alatzma lo asav lo klum. Because a widow who does an appraisal to herself. Okay, Rashi lacha sade yisamim laatzma b'shumas ksuvasa, where basically she took the land and she held it for herself, and she basically came up with a figure, a number herself in terms of appraisal. Lo asav lo klum, that's nothing. Now hechidami ida achraza my lo asav lo klum. So the Gemara says, well, if she made achraza, and so she made an announcement, and she heard bids going on the property, so what's wrong? In other words, now she has an idea of how much the property is worth. So el lav dolo achraz. So the Gemara says it must be that there was no achraza that was done. The Gemara says, and so what do you see over here? That achraza is not necessary, because the only thing that we are ruling out is for her to retain the property for herself, coming up with some number in terms of what the property is worth. That's no good. But she sells the property to somebody else, so doesn't that sale represent a good picture of what the value of the property is worth? So, okay, it sounds like we can make the argument that she doesn't have to make a achraza, and a sale to somebody else would be fine. La'olam da achraza, the Gemara says, no. maybe hachras is necessary. And udamri la man sim ma sham lech. The Gemara says that really there's a hachras, and still, even with a hachras, she cannot retain the property to herself. Rashi, why not? Meaning, let's think about this. She has a ksuva. She's over the ksuva. There are properties in her husband's estate. Good. We've been saying now all this time that she has to sell that property, and only with the money from the proceeds of that sale she's going to collect. Why not? Why not make a hachraza? Through the hachraza, now through the auction, you'll find out how much the property is worth. And why not be able to retain that property herself? So Rashi over here, Mancham Lach, Mimi Kabilt Mechira Zu. In other words, Rashi says, where did you get the sale from? Lomi Bezdin, Volomi Yasomim. Meaning, no one sold you this property, so you didn't get it from Bezdin, you didn't get it from the Yasomim. Lefichach lo yatsa karka mirishus hayasomim. The property has to be extracted from the Yasomim. But if somebody else gives an appraisal of the property and buys the property, nafak mirishus hayorshin. So therefore it exits the estate of the Yorshin, Shari Nasnu Lachachamim, Rishusim Kor. She has given authorization to sell the property. She does not have authorization to retain the property. Interesting. In other words, basically, correct. In other words, basically, there must be a sale that's done over here. She's too much of a interested party over here, but right. In other words, and I can even say it a little bit stronger. It's more than she's just an interested party. She basically has a hand in this property, and there must be a sale of this property. She can't be on both sides of the sale. She can't be the one selling and the one buying. There has to be a buyer and there has to be a seller. And because she's too much of an insider on this property, so therefore, even with a hachraza, and now with the auction, we know what the sale price is. And we're confident that that's the fair market value of it. But there still has to be a sale.
Is she looking as a shliach or an apotropos?
Right. Right. Basically, I mean, the way, again, Rashi's not saying a lot, but basically what it sounds like is that she's part owner of the property. And again, part ownership is based on the fact that she has a ksuva, which provides her that she put it on the property. And there has to be a sale of that property. Okay. Back to the Gemara. Let's finish up. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Let me read it again correctly. So a person was deposited a purse of the orphans. In other words, he was a custodian. So now also, right, not mentioned in the Gemara, but an important detail in order to understand what's going on right now, not only was it deposited by him, but also he was a creditor. So he was owed money. And it happens to be right now that he's holding some of the possessions of the Yasomim. So Shamlanafshe Barba Meazuze. So what did he do? He appraised it. Okay, so it's worth 400. So Ayakar Kambishis Mea. And what happened is that it went up in value. It was a precious metal, and it went up in value to 600. Also coming to Rabbi Ami Amale Manshamlech. And Rabbi Ami says, what you did is no good. Meaning, you owe the money. I totally get that. But here's what you didn't do. You didn't sell the property in terms of recouping your debt. You just held it onto yourself, and that's unacceptable. In other words, you could sell off the parts of the estate, but you cannot hold it for yourself. And then the Gemara concludes. The Gemara says, just to conclude on this matter, the woman when selling off the property, so if asked to make a shuvah and basin, she'll have to do so. Again, according to Rashi, just simply to declare that she collected nothing above that which the ksuvah entitled her to. And ein tzricha hachraza, and on top of that, also there is no hachraza that is required. She could do it without having a public auction. Let's say an almana widow was owed 200, and she sells the property of her late husband's estate. And let's say it was a piece of property that was worth objectively 100, although I'm using the word objectively loosely over here. Okay, in other words, like we've seen, and like we all know, right? To put a fixed price on property is very difficult. There's always going to be a constant fluctuation of price within the property. But right now, it's fair to say, or let's just say it, because the Mishnah does, that right now, the assessed property is worth 100, but she did a great job marketing that land. Okay, and what did she do? She fetched a price of 200 for that land. So this is interesting now. She's owed a ksuva of 200. She sold the land, and she was just she did a great job. She very aggressively promoted that land, and she sold it now for 200, even though the land was really worth 100. So now, when you ask a simple question, is her obligation of ksuva been satisfied? So you can answer yes, and you can answer no. You can answer yes because she got the money. You can answer no because the land that she sold was only worth 100. Okay, where do we land on this issue? The Mishnah is going to be very clear. But before we get to the punchline, so Oshava Masayim Bemana, or let's go the other direction. Let's say the property is worth 200, and she did a terrible job selling the land, and she sold the land for only 100. Okay, now that is obviously a gross representation of what the property was actually worth, but that's what she got. Niskabla ksuvasa. In both cases, we view her ksuva obligation as being satisfied. Now, obviously, both sides of this issue are going to be chidushim. Both sides of them. Meaning on the side that the land was worth 100, so you could have made the argument, okay, that 100 is what its true value is worth. So we'll say, even though she did a great job in terms of selling the price, but you could have made the argument that the ksuva really is a reflection of the land. The land is really only 100. You could have said that she only gets a ksuva, that only half of her ksuva has been paid. But to that, the Mishnah's chiddush is no. She gets 200 zuz. She was owed 200 zuz. Good. Yeshakoach. And the Yisomim, thank you very much. That's one side of the chiddush. And the other side of the chiddush, I mean, you could argue, but you can argue either way, which one's a bigger chiddush. But if I could just stake my own opinion, second one sounds like a bigger chiddush. Right. Second one is that the objective value of the land was 200, and she only got 100 for it. We say to her, look, you sold the land that was worth 200. I understand you did a miserable job selling the land, but the land was worth 200. That properly reflected your ksuva, even though you're only walking away with 100 from that sale, but okay. You need to ask the following question. What about the Isser in the Torah? This week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, we know that whenever you buy and sell, you have to sell its fair market value. And you cannot undersell and you cannot oversell. This is what's called Ona'a. Ona'a, one of the Isser in the Torah, is that you can't exploit somebody else in a sale. We also know, that's going to be the punchline. We also know that if a sale exceeds or it devalues the fair market value by 1/6, we know Mekach Bato, that the sale is not going to be a valid sale. So over here, we're talking about a land that was worth objectively 200. She sold it for 100. Didn't she get exploited? So the answer is yes. But we have a general rule. Ain ona lekarkos. We have a general rule throughout Shas, and we have to say it over here. The Gemara doesn't say it here, but you have to say it, that there's no ona, there's no iser of ona when it comes to karka. Now, according to the Rambam, by the way, when the Gemara says ain ona lekarkos, the Rambam says, meaning nothing. There's simply no ona. Meaning prices and property fluctuate to such a high and low level that you can never say that, exactly. Right, you can never say its exact value. You really don't know what the fair market value is, and therefore properties can be sold at really any price, even though we have a general idea how much it goes for. Haisak suvasa mano machra shava mana vidina bimana. So michrabato. I'm going to finish up the Mishnah. Let's say her ksuva was a full mana, and she sold the property that was worth a mana plus a dinar, and she sold it for just one mana. So in other words, she undersold the land of the Yisomim. Michra bato. So that's no good. That sale goes back because once again, she's not selling her property, she's selling the Yisomim property in order to recoup her obligation. But once she undersells it, so then obviously she's cheating the Yisomim out of money, and then obviously that's going to void the whole sale. Now, even if she says, look, I'm not going to cause a loss for the Yerushim, I'll reimburse the difference. That's also no good. Machrabata. And the reason why that's no good, very intuitive, is because, look, the Yorshim could say to her, this is our property. You have no right to do that. You can't undersell property with and just simply say, that's a reimbursement. You're only entitled to a property that's valued at or less than your ksuva. But you can't sell a property of ours that exceeds the value of your ksuva. So Rabbi Shimon basically agrees, but in other words, but a small difference like a dinar is not going to be enough to upset the sale. The difference has to be that of a legally valid piece of property. The Gemara Baba Basra tells us, the Mishnah over here is reflecting that viewpoint, that a legally sized piece of property is a property that is valued at Tisha Kabim. Tisha Kabim is a volume amount. Basically, the way they measure land is how much seed can be planted on that land. So Tisha Kabim is the amount of seed that can be planted on the land. That's a legally valid land. So in other words, if the land that she sold off was greater than her ksuva by Tisha Kabin, so then that's going to be a batel sale. Ubegina bas chatzikav, and when it comes to a garden, so a valid size of a land is a half a kav, could Rabbi Akiva beis rova. And Rabbi Akiva says a quarter of a kav. Haisek zuva arba meyazuzah machor lezeb amana olachron yafemana v'dinar. Let's say there were four parcels of land, and she was owed 400, and each parcel of land was 100, so she sold 100, 200, 300, and then and the last one, I'm sorry, and the last piece of land that she sold was more than 100. It was 100 in dinar. Sha'achron, batov shakula machron kayam. So sales 1, 2, and 3 are valid because they satisfied the first 300 of Riksuva. It's only the last sale, which she sold more land than she should have. Only for that last sale, we're going to say that the machra, that the mechira is going to be batal, but the first three still are intact. Okay, we'll stop over here. Pick it up with the Gemara on the bottom of the Amud tomorrow morning.